Welcome back to Kettlebells and Cocktails. I'm your host, John, back with my bestie, Nikki. Nikki, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing tonight?
Two nights in a row for us.
I know. I love it.
Do you? Do you really? I spent a significant portion of last night's show making fun of where you live, so I was hoping you didn't hate me at this point.
Speaking of, I will also make fun of where I live. I have a blanket on my legs tonight, and what? I'm about to turn on the heat in this old office of mine because it's like officially fall. And I'm telling you, before the sun comes up and after the sun goes down, it's officially cold. I don't care where you're from or where your tolerance is. The shit is cold.
Well, it's cold where you live, cold where I live, cold where at least one of our guests lives. Let me introduce our guests for tonight and we'll just jump right in. So two very dear friends that I've known for quite a while. We'll have to figure out how long. Karen Thompson, who I met at CrossFit Health. We have a long story behind that, but met in person first at CrossFit headquarters in Santa Cruz or Scotts Valley, if you want to get it really correct. And then Tamara Morosky, who happens to be my yoga coach. It's kind of a coach isn't right, but that's what I go by.
Okay. I was going to say
yoga close teacher. Enough. Yoga well, that's teacher.
Fine. What? That's fine. Yogi, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever. Everyone's my coach and goes to Grand Falls CrossFit and is partnered up with Karen for a project we're talking about tonight. So welcome both of you to the show.
Thanks. Thank you. Actually, fun fact, John is the first guy who sent me red roses.
I did send you roses.
Office. That's so sweet. I did. Oh my gosh. To the office and everyone was like, oh my gosh, somebody sent you red roses. Who was it? And I was like, I don't know. You guys are going to have to open the cart because I didn't live in Santa Cruz. And they opened the cart and they were like, it's JW. Who is that? And I went off.
Nice.
What was the occasion? What was the cause for red roses?
They introduced me. Yeah, you can. They flew me and a friend of mine, Chad, who you met before, out to Santa Cruz to interview Greg and to be part of the CrossFit Health thing that was going on that weekend. And it was fun. It was good. And so I thought it was very nice what a nice job they did taking care of us. So I sent flowers.
Well, now I'm jealous. I haven't gotten red roses. Nikki, have you gotten red roses?
I have never gotten red roses from John. Please hold the phone.
Oh, come on.
You have a lot of work to do now.
I feel like a lot of us might deserve some kind of floral arrangement in our future.
I don't think at any point, Nikki, you or Tamara ever worked directly for Greg Glassman, who I was trying to impress at the time. All right. So
okay.
You impressed him. You impressed him for sure.
Yeah, that was the last time he was happy with me. It went all downhill after that. All downhill after that. Guaranteed. Well, we want to start by talking about this festival you have going on, Revita Fest, and it's a very fancy name, but it's a very cool thing you have going on, and you have a whole bunch of people I know that are in it. So I'm not going to lie, I'm a little hurt I'm not speaking, but I still want to hear about it.
It's like a bunch of healthcare and lifestyle professionals, right?
What your medical degree is.
First of all, I have a Google degree like everyone else.
Right.
Everyone
else. I have a Google anxiety medical degree.
Yeah.
If you ever need anyone to speak on what it's like when you should never Google like medical issues, I can speak to that.
Worst case scenario when looking at symptoms, right?
Oh, that's me.
Out of proportion. Oh, I did that. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Tom McCoy, your business partner, is one of our speakers. So kind of by association, I was like, because you guys are in such close proximity, it's almost like having the same person in a weird way. And so that's how I justify it, because
he's the least funny half of my brain. Let's just be really clear. He will be the least funny of our partnership, but he's absolutely the smartest in our partnership. There's no doubt about that whatsoever.
Well, let's zoom out a little bit. If this is the first time that our listeners are hearing about Revita Fest, explain a little bit about what exactly it is, when it is, and who all are the experts who are going to be speaking there.
Absolutely. So I used to work for CrossFit full time, and in May, I got a call from our HR department and they were like, sorry, you no longer have a job. And it literally broke my heart to the point where I honestly didn't know what I was going to do. I'm a single mom. in a country that I'm not from. I don't have any family here. I don't have the dad, my kid's dad doesn't help me support them in any way. And so here I was, this primary breadwinner. And suddenly, in the blink of an eye, I feel I have nothing. My security, my stability, everything has been ripped from me. And I did not know what to do. And I literally just, I just crumbled. Like I, it was one of the biggest shocks of my entire life. This, I cared so deeply for CrossFit and CrossFit Health. And it was, John was like with me on this journey, right? It was this baby. It was like losing a child. I brought this thing from infancy with Greg and then took it through when Eric Rosa took over and then like fought really hard to keep it going and keep the projects that I had put so much energy and effort into alive. And then suddenly there was just nothing, was no warning. It just came out of the blue and I didn't know what to do. And so the day that it happened, I was just in complete shock. And I took that day to just kind of like, just try to process what had happened. And then I was like, you know what? I've been through some really fucking hard things in my life. Excuse my language. This is not going to get me down. Like, how can I use this as an opportunity to change? What can I do to stand up and to support myself and not feel like a victim and use this thing that happened as an opportunity for growth instead of something that's going to keep me down? And so I was like, what is the thing that I love doing the most? And the thing that I love doing the most is organizing events and conferences in the health and fitness space. That's my background before I joined CrossFit. And so that's what I knew how to go back to. And then I also have a really wonderful way of building relationships with people. And I think that's probably one of my like strongest points is that I have had phenomenal opportunities to meet people who are the leaders in their field in the health and wellness space, and they have become friends. And so I reached out to everyone of them, and I was like, would you guys speak at this virtual summit that I'm going to host? And I was like, Jason Fung and Gary Taubes and Nina Teicholz and Anthony Chaffee and BJ Fogg at the time and Mark Sisson and all these people who I absolutely love and adore. And they're like, absolutely, you tell us what you need and we will do it. And so initially I was just going to do like a one-day event, and then it kind of turned into so many people saying yes that it turned into a 5-day event. And then I was like, Tamara, do you want to come and do breathwork and sobriety? And she was like, absolutely, I'm going to support you no matter what you do. And John was the same. And so it kind of turned into this thing. And the reason it's a virtual event is because I don't have the funds this year to host it as an in-person event, but my goal is for next year for it to be in-person. And then it's not just another boring medical conference, because I can't stand boring and just sterile clinical information. So I wanted to combine this feeling of a medical conference with this concept of a festival. That's where the fest, Revita Fest, comes in, where hopefully next year we will have DJs and music and everything alongside this education and these workshops and things. So that's just in a nutshell. I spoke for a long time, but basically what it is.
It sounds so incredible to me, partially because of the breadth of speakers and subjects that you guys are covering. And if anyone, we'll provide all the links and everything for people to click through and look at the lineup and get tickets. But truly the breadth of subject matters that you guys are really addressing in the health, wellness, fitness, and lifestyle spaces, number one, really impresses me. And then number two, the types of experts and the very specific stances they have on all of these medical topics, lifestyle topics, like it is a true microcosm of what sets our little niche of health and fitness apart, I think. And it's, you're right, it's not like a boring medical conference. It's, if you're a healthcare professional, you're probably super interested in this. If you just kind of like live and breathe in the CrossFit community, you're probably interested in this. And I was reading the lineup being like, ooh, what does this guy have to say about intermittent fasting? I don't really do it. I kind of used to do it, but I'd love to know what the latest, greatest research on it is, right? And then there's the sobriety topics, and then there's just so much. There's just so many. There's like women and hormonal stuff, and there's all these different things that just as a non-medical professional, but as someone who is definitely in this space where we're so invested in our bodies and what they can do, I am interested. And so I really commend you for putting together something that is far and wide just interesting to people who give a shit about their wellness in a way that is not like reading a textbook or Googling an article. It's like real humans who are the experts in their fields who are going to make this shit interesting for you because you need to know it to survive.
Absolutely. And I think what you said about the audience and the CrossFit audience, like this is a very, and I learned this from working at CrossFit and from being a CrossFit affiliate member, like CrossFit has a smart audience.
Mm-hmm.
Are individuals who are willing to think for themselves, who are willing to look at alternate views of health and wellness and not just follow the status quo, right?
Right.
And really decide for themselves, is this working for me? Like I can think objectively, I can actually experiment and figure out if this works for me or not. They're not closed-minded. They are willing to push themselves beyond the boundaries of what we believe is normal in order to become extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people that you meet in the CrossFit gyms, because of the workouts that we do, because of the community, because of the methodology, because of everything, is a very unique but magical community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like for all of the services that we offer within the CrossFit space, like even if you are an affiliate owner, if you're the kind of person who offers like a nutrition program, if you're the kind of person who offers one-on-one personal training, like there's a little bit of something for everyone to really get a better understanding of how to even round out the things that they're trying to educate their affiliates on a daily basis, which is really cool.
Really cool. For sure. And then this, it's been accredited with 18 CEUs from CrossFit, right? So CrossFit, what I love about it as well is if you are a level three, a CFL three, you have to maintain your credential by getting continuing education units. And so CrossFit places such a big emphasis on educating their trainers and their coaches, which no one else does, right? Like seriously, oh, not no one else, but no one else in the way that CrossFit allows for this exploration of what health and wellness and fitness really means. And so that was a big win for us as well to get accredited with 18 CEUs and they need 36 per year. I mean, that was awesome.
I know. I should say this to Matt because he needs CEs every year to keep working with his PharmD license. I wonder if that would weirdly qualify in some way, shape, or form. I don't know. I'll have to ask him. I'll have to send him a link and ask him. So this is all happening. So just a few specifics, like when is it? And it's 5 days and you can access like webinar style. What is the format?
Yeah. So it's 5 days. It goes live October 17th, or the first day will go live October 17th, and then every day after that until the 21st. And then the replay will be available for 90 days afterwards. It's basically me interviewing all these experts. I'm asking them all the questions that I want to know and what I think the fitness and health community wants to know. So it's not like sitting through boring slide decks. It's really trying to understand what their specific specialty really means and how it can be applied to the trainer or the person watching. So I think it's great. I tried to get the interviews to be 20 minutes, but some people were so fascinating that it kind of went a little bit longer. And so I shouldn't advertise that they're all 20 minutes because they're not, because it was just amazing. Like my interview with Greg, I hadn't spoken with Greg for the longest time, Greg Lassman. And when we got on the call, we started talking about broken science and the stuff that we'd been doing at CrossFit Health and really started there. But then it morphed into so much more. What does Greg think the new leadership at CrossFit want? Information does Greg have for the CrossFit affiliates? What suggestions does he have? And it was a really beautiful, heartfelt conversation that feeds into the space so, so nicely. So yeah, it goes live October 17th. You can have access to it for 90 days afterwards. And it's just essentially a celebration and exploration of health in an effort to make health sexy and fun again. And I think the CrossFit community really already does that. And so it's not just aimed at the CrossFit community, but I think in our society, health has become something that seems so boring and awful and hard and horrible. And
then you have to eat your veggies.
Yeah, you have to eat your vegetables and all that stuff. And so how do we make it so attractive that you want to be a part of it? And I'm hoping that this is a way to do it.
So, Tamara, how did you get roped into this? And what is your conversation
I'm trying
all
to
about?
Remember. So, Karin, I think John actually told me about you. And it was like, you have to meet this chick. You guys have a lot in common, especially knowing that I've been 2 years sober. And I think, Karin, I don't know how long you have been sober, but 19 years.
Atta girl. You guys go.
But so I reached out to her on Instagram and we automatically hit it off. Like I don't know how long we talked on the phone, but it was just, our stories are very similar, the way that, not just around alcohol, but also me go, I went also through a separation, have two boys. So we both had boys, right, Karen?
Yeah.
And so when she talked about RevitaFest, my yoga classes, so I brought yoga to our gym and it's the same vibe. So when I think about health and wellness, my yoga classes, I blast the music. I'm making sure that people are getting into their breath, getting into their body. So everything she was talking about just really aligned with how I approach health. And a lot of the things that she talks about, even around the mindset around relationships. So it's just really aligned with where I'm going. So I'm really excited. I'm going to be closing out the festival this year. Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And getting into the breath too, getting into the body, maybe doing some fun little poses, maybe a little challenges, things like that. So it'll be fun.
So it's a little bit interactive then. It's not just lectures and interviews and seminars. It's
no,
get up off your butt and get into this breath work and we're all going to do this together kind of thing.
Absolutely. Cool. So we have some workshops and so lectures, workshops, and then the element of music, John was going to actually perform for us. I'm so excited.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
John,
you goodness.
I need custom music for my yoga class. You can play.
Oh, I've got you. It's called Spotify. It's awesome.
No, you can't use Spotify. You can't use Spotify.
You actually can't. It'll get shut.
Yeah, it'll get shut down. I'll mess everything up. I seriously, we could record it. You could just
be John is grown in the corner.
Okay.
We could green screen him into the background. That would be ideal. I'm here for this.
Listen,
everybody, ticket sales boosted immediately.
This is going to happen. This
would be like, who is the guy that looks like Moby doing a bad job playing guitar? That's what people would ask.
Or Fat Boy Slim, either.
Yeah.
Is that Moby or is it Fat Boy Slim? We don't know. Or is it John Woody from Make What's Great Again?
It's all three.
All the same people.
They've never been in the same room together. That's all I'm saying.
The same room.
I know. Now you've got people Googling Fat Boy Slim. I swear to God, I'm going to have to hashtag that.
No, they don't know.
I know. Yeah. And I think I originally connected you guys because Tamara and I were talking about sobriety
and
I'm like, oh, you have to talk to Karin. Like you guys are two peas in a pod. So
yeah,
I'm a good matchmaker.
You are a good matchmaker.
Perfect.
I know, right?
So how have your personal journeys through sobriety helped shape the way that you look at overall health and wellness, which I'm sure has been very much infused in how you're organizing your talks and the event in general?
So I'll tell you a little bit about my journey. So I think I took my first sip of alcohol when I was like 12. Okay. And thinking about it, and then, so I have had some childhood trauma. So my parents separated when I was like 10. My dad passed away when I was 16. And I was always like that party girl, but I was an athlete. Like I was a volleyball. I was starting varsity and as a freshman, I was track. I was always an athlete, but I was also like a weekend warrior. Mm-hmm. And then you think about it, like how society is now too. You go to college and it's the same kind of thing. You're drinking Thursdays, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then I ended up having kids when I was 25, was with my partner for about 12 years. And that really, it was tough because I started realizing that I was using alcohol and we would drink on the weekends. We'd have our bottle of wine. John, we talked about this, how it's like you kind of get in this routine of, what are we doing this weekend? We're going to have some wine, whatever.
Oh, like totally.
It's just Sunday's football. What are you doing? You're drinking.
Yep.
So it was never that I felt like I was an alcoholic, but I felt like I knew that there was this attachment to it. I would take months off, but I would go right back and saying, okay, I'm going to only have one glass of wine. Well, that would never happen with me. I would drink and I would drink another glass of wine and I might have a bottle by the end of the day. So I realized that I was using it to relieve stress and numb
emotions that were really deep down. And when I left my ex, I thought for the first time in my life, oh my God, I'm going to be able to actually get a whole, I'm going to be able to be the person that I know I'm going to be in my head. And what happened was so interesting because that was the most stressful part of my entire life. And so I ended up drinking even more. Again, it was the weekends, like however thing, it's just so interesting thing looking back. And then moving out, getting my own place, all of those things, it just compounded. So then the pandemic hit. And that was probably the darkest time of my life where, you know, actually having to be alone and figure out, okay, this is really weird for me to have to sit here and to be by myself. It was just really stirring up a lot of things. So then that really catapulted me even more into this. It was just evolving. I could feel it evolving. And at the end of the day, unfortunately, like it took me, I ended up getting in a car accident while I was drinking. And honestly, I should not be alive. John, did I ever tell you that story?
No, I don't think so.
I never told you this story. Okay.
Not this part, no.
Wow. Yeah, maybe I was saving it for this.
This very moment.
Breaking news. Let's go.
I thought I told you. No. So it was 2.5 years ago, but I was driving home. I went and saw some girlfriends and I should not have drove home, but I didn't think anything of it. It was just one of those things. But yeah, I ended up coming up to a stop sign. I don't know if I dozed off or if I reached down for my phone to check my phone. But I remember seeing a light and I hit a pole and then swerved around, tried to get like regain control and hit another pole. And it was awful. Like the next day I went and obviously legal stuff. Thank God I did not hurt anybody. Thank God I did not hurt myself. But I walked away from that I had a concussion. But I remember just looking at my car the next day and I was like, this is not okay. Like it was completely totaled, completely gone. Mm-hmm. I did not think I did that to my car, but I woke up and I was like, okay, this is done. I'm done. And the way it was automatically when I would even look at alcohol, it almost like my brain turned off from, like, I look at it like it's water now. I wish I could figure out what happened in my brain, because if I could somehow bottle that up and give it to people that are going through things like that, like it's really interesting. So that's a long story, but yeah, it's been 2.5 years and I just think about how I was before and how I am now. I'm completely a different person. I'm more mindful with my children. Like I'm more present. My health, yes, there's like this body side where my body is completely transformed and I've lost weight and all these things, but really it is the mindset. It almost has allowed me to uncover all of these things that who I thought I was. I'm still the party girl. I still go out. I still go dancing. I still have so much fun on the weekends, but I just don't drink and I can leave whenever I want to. And that's super fun. And I can wake up feeling really good and go into the gym and crush my workout. So it's just been really interesting. There's still things that I notice around the mental side where it's not necessarily about drinking, but it's, oh, maybe I drank to numb. Mm-hmm. The de-stress society. It's crazy. We were talking about this too, about how many events is you go to, even health events, where all it is, it's a big party around alcohol.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's really transformed my life as far as just knowing myself now. I know 1,000% I am who I am. And it's almost like I'm raw. Like I'm completely free of the thoughts or the perception of who I thought I was before.
It's really interesting to gain the perspective on an unhealthy relationship with alcohol when you're not the sort of like stereotypical quote unquote alcoholic, right? I think when people think, oh, I can't be an alcoholic. I don't drink every night.
Right.
So gaining the perspective and understanding like, well, it might be the reason why I'm reaching for a drink, whether it be to numb some feelings or whether it be purely out of habit. Let's evaluate that. Is that the right way at it? It might be the volume at which I am drinking. It might not necessarily be every night, but if it's every weekend getting shammered, then Is there a possibility to stop at one? And if not, maybe that's an unhealthy relationship. And I'm very saddened to hear that it took this almost like near-death experience for you to gain that additional perspective. But whatever happened to you that night clearly saved your life in a sense.
Life. And I say that all the time. It's like, I needed that to happen. I look back now and I'm so grateful for every single thing that I went through. I'm so grateful for it because I don't know, maybe I would have quit if that didn't happen. My mind was wanting it, but mm-hmm. I truly do think things happen for you for a reason. And that was the lesson that I needed to learn. I needed to learn it that way. Thank God nothing else happened to somebody else, to me, to, you know, I just mm-hmm. can't even imagine my kids. Like, I can't imagine that, but I truly do feel grateful for it.
No, and I feel like every journey through sobriety must be incredibly personal and very different. But Karin, you must have felt some similarities when you first met Tamara to be like, okay, my thing might have been my own thing, but I see where you're coming from and I've been on that journey.
I definitely think sobriety or being in recovery from any substance is definitely something that connects people instantly, right? I know that if somebody works a program, which I'm very big on 12-step program, then that's a friend. I don't need to speak to them about much. I just know that that's a kindred spirit who I can depend on no matter what. You know, for me, alcohol and drugs, it was this external solution that I was trying to find to this internal problem. So I was always looking for something outside of myself to fill this hole that I had inside of me. And I had that hole inside of me from the age of 4. You know? And when I went into recovery and started doing a ton of work on it, like my addiction to all these substances started with an addiction to sugar when I was 4 years old. Wow. And it was me trying to make sense of a trauma that would have happened in my life that I didn't know how to kind of address or work through. And that which started this looking for this external substance to soothe this internal problem. And that morphed into alcohol and drugs when I got into the modeling industry when I was 14 years old. From the very first time I ever drank, once I started, I couldn't stop. I'm not a person who could have one drink and be like, I'm done. I would have one drink and then the next morning I would wake up. I would not remember a single thing. I would never remember what had happened. I would black out completely. I would have to call my friends and be like, what did I do? How did I get here? And when I was young, I had dreams of becoming a doctor. My grandfather had done the first heart transplant in South Africa. I was convinced I was going to become a neurosurgeon. I wanted to like work on brain. From him doing the heart, I was like, let me do the brain. This is a beautiful thing. Like all I want to do in life is help other people. And then I got lost on this journey of modeling and eating disorder. I had anorexia, bulimia, compulsive overeating, alcoholism, other substance addictions, and got caught in this world where everything was about external appearances and the way that you look. Then I completely lost that sense of self and who I was until the age of 24, where one morning I woke up after the most hardcore bender. And I remember like stumbling to the bathroom and drinking water straight from the tap. And I remember looking up into the mirror and I didn't recognize this person who was looking back at me. It was like this empty shell of a human being. And in that moment, it was like my life flashed through past me. And I was like, what happened to this little girl with all these dreams? She used to walk like barefoot on the farm roads at her grand's house, who just wanted to help people, who wanted so bad to become a doctor, who had this vision and purpose. And I was 24 years old and I had nothing to show for myself. And I was like, I want to take my own life. Like I have nothing. I have no one. There's nothing to live for. And I was so low and I was so down. And that was the day that I decided that I would do whatever it took to live a life of meaning and purpose. And that was the day that I booked into a rehab center and I was there for 9 months. I did detox, primary care, secondary care, tertiary care, sober living, health. And then met my ex-husband and we opened the largest addiction psychiatric facility, continuum of care facilities in South Africa. And we ran that for 10 years. And that's where my background in like health and fitness really started, because that's where we started doing work in sugar addiction. And that's how I got into the health space. But yeah,
my sobriety, honestly, is the greatest gift. Like the other day when I celebrated 19 years, I get so emotional on that day. Like I will never forget that girl who had no hope, nothing. I did not think that life could change. I felt so alone. I felt so hopeless. I had no idea who I was. And coming into recovery was the scariest thing I have ever done in my entire life, because I had to face myself in a way that I never had. And I had to take responsibility for myself and grow up. But it's been a beautiful journey, and nothing I have in my life today I would have if I didn't have my sobriety.
How did you, and I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer this question, but how did you get yourself from that low point to setting foot in the rehab? Because when you're looking in the mirror and you're like, this life is not worth living. Yeah. I think the fear we have people in that scenario is their life ends. Oh, how did you stop yourself and turn around and say, I'm going to set foot in this facility and just see what happens? You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. My uncle had died from a drug overdose when I was 4. And I knew how that had devastated my family. I knew how another day had devastated my family and how they'd all felt so responsible for not doing anything, for not stepping in. And it changed my mom and it changed my gran beyond measure. No one was ever the same after that incident, right? And so I knew that I could not do that to my family. And I knew the only way that I was going to be able to get help was to ask for help.
Right.
So I reached out to my one friend who was still in my life and who was still willing to speak to me. And she called my dad, and my dad was like, oh, you should go to a horse farm. You're just stressed out. And my mom was like, absolutely no chance in hell. Like, I've been trying to get this kid into rehab since she was 16. She's managed to swap every test out. She's managed to, like, you know what I mean? Like, every devious act she's managed to overcome. She's finally asking for help. We're booking her into rehab. And I thought I was going to be in there for 3 weeks and they would teach me how to drink moderately. But that wasn't the case.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like, hard work.
You're like, can you teach me how to make just like one great martini? Because then I'll be good.
Can I just have one? Can I come back out and learn how to do it like responsibly? But that wasn't the case. Like, I learned that I'm an addict and alcoholic and that I have an eating disorder and that I can never drink or use in the way that other people can.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to. I'm not the type of person who does anything in moderation. Like, even in my career, I'm so ambitious. I'm so driven. I will go to any lengths. I will work 16-hour days by myself. I will do whatever it takes, right? And so everything that I did as an addict and an alcoholic that was negative, I've managed to turn into a positive as well.
Sure.
And so that was probably the best lesson.
There are so many personality traits. I think we talk about this a lot in CrossFit, right? Where we oftentimes are swapping one addiction for another, be it healthy or unhealthy. And I think there's a lot of personality traits in people who are driven and they're willing to put themselves in really uncomfortable situations.
Yes.
Physically.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's definitely a type of person and a shared mentality when it comes to all that type of stuff, which is why a lot of CrossFitters also work hard, play hard. But I do think that a lot of people can relate to your stories in a way that they've had to make a change, or maybe they're hearing this and they're like, I need to make a change. But I have a question that, regardless of whether or not you're the kind of person who has dealt with substance abuse or an addiction disorder, you might relate to this. Is emotional eating a gateway to this type of addictive behavior? Because when you talk about sugar addiction or looking for something external that kind of like feeds that response, I think of like I'm in a bad mood, I'm going to eat whatever I want, I deserve this treat, or I'm in a great mood and I'm celebrating something and now I'm going to eat this sugar or this whatever reward. And I'm just curious, like, hearing you talk about sugar addiction, I'm like, is emotional eating sort of like on that path where it's hard to control in a sense, and it kind of is one of these behaviors we're talking about?
Well, here's the thing, right? The definition of addiction is the compulsive pursuit of a behavior or a substance despite the negative consequences. And so everyone can have a bad day. Everyone can eat a drink. It's just not everyone can act out in the same way. Nikki, you may like have like crave, you had an awful day, you crave Arya's, you have one night of awful eating, and then you're like, you know what, I'm going to get back on track. I'm not going to beat myself up about it. I'm just going to keep going. For somebody who is truly an addict, they will keep going and they will beat themselves up, and they'll get stuck in this addictive spiral of guilt, shame, and fear. This like triangle of addiction that just pulls you down and leads you to just do it over and over again. And so it's not the same type of behavior as somebody who can have one drink or one cookie. It's a very different way of doing it. You know, secretly going to buy stuff and eating it in your car without anybody seeing you, and then hiding the wrappers and doing that over and over again, like isolated incidents, sure. Like we all do that kind of stuff. Mm. But once that becomes a habit, and once you don't want anybody to know, and once you try to hide it, and once you start denying it to yourself and the consequences it has on your health, then you have a problem.
What's really interesting, Nikki, is so the emotional eating after I stopped drinking, that's so I started realizing then I was craving sugar. Mm-hmm. And it was like hardcore, I want sugar. And then when I would get stressed, I would start to overeat and emotionally eat when I'm stressed out. And so I came to this realization that this is the same thing that I was doing when I was drinking. It's the same feeling inside my body that I was doing when I would wanted a glass of wine. So why yoga really has helped me become more aware of what's really going on inside. And what I realized is, okay, so if a thought creates an emotion inside of you that creates a reaction. So what is the thought that I'm telling myself that when I get stressed? So it's like creating that space between what's really going on with me? And honestly, I still, this week I've been moving. I'm just telling John, I've been moving. I have been having a week from hell. And last night I'm like, oh my God, I'm feeling this coming on where I just want to eat like shit. I just want to eat like shit. And it's like that. I want to numb myself. It's okay. What is really going on inside my body? What is it that I need to give myself? And it usually comes down to I need to give myself love or safety or the feeling of like compassion or we were talking about us CrossFitters doing crazy things. Like I love cold plunging. I'm like obsessed. And
I
got my $1 million. Like, oh my gosh, you have to come.
No way.
I will go through your breath work and everything. I promise you, it will. You'll fall in love. It's your
day. I can't do it. I don't even like when we run out of water in the shower. I'm like, I'm out here. Forget it.
Run out of water in the shower? That sounds awful. Is that enough?
No, you like sometimes you like if we ran a bath for the baby and then my husband took a shower and then I'm last, like you like run out of hot water if you do it all too fast.
Yeah.
And the washing machine is running or some bullshit like that. I'm like, fuck this. My hair can wait 2 more days. It's fine.
It's fine.
But anyway, you love a cold plunge. And that's something that gives you that response.
It gives me almost this. Meditation. So when I cold plunge, it almost makes me feel like my thoughts go away. It is a sense of mental bliss where kind of things become super clear. I could hear things very clearly. Like I usually go out and there's a river in the wintertime. In the winter, we'll go out in a river. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. There's a waterfall and everything. Mm. And it's like time slows down when I cold plunge. And that's it. What I just started really getting into my meditation practice. And I'm not there yet with a regular meditation practice. But I feel like when those emotions come up, it's just really about figuring out what is really going on with me. And it's those things that you can do to kind of start to ask yourself that question. It's like, okay, what am I thinking in my head? Like, where did I feel this emotion before? Is it reminding me of something? Is it something from my childhood that it's like bringing up that I still haven't let that emotion pass through my body? So it's like coming up again. So I think it's just that going through that work of really getting deep and understanding yourself a little bit more.
It seems like it allows you to slow down a little bit because a lot of times when we want the thing, whether we're like, oh, I just need a drink, or oh, I just need a piece of chocolate. That's my thing. Actually, both of those things are my thing, to be honest. I reach for it instantly. I don't take time to slow down and ask myself, what is my body telling me, or what am I masking, or what is the problem here? So that, I just feel like that step of being like, hold on, one hand on the fridge door before I open this. What is the thing that I really need to be addressing?
They say it takes 90 seconds for emotion to pass. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, Karina. I don't know if that's right or not, but that's what I've heard and that's what I'm sticking to. But yeah, 90 seconds. Like if you could breathe through 90 seconds of whatever you're feeling and let it pass through and accept the way that you're feeling and not pushing it away, it will kind of allow itself to fizzle out. And then that does, it creates the space from the emotion, then the reaction. And then think about patterns. Like the more you disrupt that pattern, the easier it gets over time.
Is there going to be a 90-second emotion talk as part of the five-day thing? Because I'm here for that conversation too. Would love to know more about how long to wait before I open the chocolate. And then if I still want the chocolate in 90 seconds, it means I'm supposed to have the chocolate, right? That's like the universe telling me.
The universe, it's still here. It's interesting to hear.
The universal sign is eat the Ferrero Rocher. I love those. Have we ever talked about the fact that I fucking love those? And they're
those are really good.
They're heritage. And I'm like, I am a chocolate snob. Don't come at me with milk chocolate. That's gross. Just the finest European dark chocolates, please. Except for those goddamn gold little Ferrero Rochers. I think I like ate them in my childhood, and in adulthood, Matt will buy me like the 100-pack for Christmas. Straight up. And I'm like, can't wait.
You're wrong.
It's the problem, actually. It is this household addiction.
York peppermint patties are mine. It's the same thing. I think. I think
toothpaste. I can't.
Oh, they're so good. I think it was the same thing. My mom used to get them for me when I was little. And I don't know. Something peppermint's supposed to make you energized. So there's and it's dark chocolate, Nikki.
Well, maybe I can get on board with the mints. I can't do it though. I can't.
For me, it's ice cream. And I was laughing because when you said people are hiding food and eating in secret, I was hiding in my hallway eating some ice cream the other night because Bean really loves ice cream.
Oh my God.
And he won't leave me alone. Like, like he literally will just stare me right in the eye and meow in my face until I give him some. And so I was hiding. I'm a grown man responsible to no one but myself. And I was hiding from my cat.
Matt will do that with chips. He calls them car chips. Again, he would kill me, but he doesn't listen to this podcast, so here you go. Chips are his favorite food group, and he doesn't like to admit that he eats so many chips because he's quite literally the picture of health, right? He like works, he sees patients dealing with chronic illness. That's like his actual main job. And so he has this theory that any chips you eat in the car don't count. Like if you buy them at the store and you eat them before you get home, car chips totally get I feel like stop at the gas station and get car chips on the way home just to have a snack. And he like will hide them, but then he can't hide them. And then he'll be like, I ate car chips. And I'm like,
you had to just bust it up and tell you.
He had to. I'm like, I never would have known. Were they good? And then he'll be like, gross. He loves Funyun. Oh. Who likes Funyun?
I've never had
your husband.
Well, Funyun's good. He must smell good if I imagine car.
I'm like, I knew you had car chips because I can smell them.
I do love this conversation on emotional eating, though. I may have told this to Tam one time, but I told this to Tom because it really became apparent how food and alcohol, but for me in this case, it was food, triggers things in your brain, makes you want more of something or makes you want to eat something.
Yeah.
And Tom and Jen had me on this like really strict diet. I was cutting for Wodapalooza and like really had it dialed in. Right. And so every day was chicken, broccoli and rice or sweet potatoes and salmon, like one ingredient foods all the time. And then after about a month of this, of literally no sugar, no fun, just really lean foods, I went out for an ice cream with my girls and I got a small chocolate custard, tiny little thing. And with the first bite, I had this sense of euphoria, like instantly, of this is the greatest thing I've ever had in my life. I was happier. I've had more energy. My body's go order another one. And it was because I'd had no sugar and no sweets for that time. So I went and talked to Tom about it the next day. I'm like, dude, what went on in my, like, why did this happen? And that's where he started to connect for me that it's no different than cocaine or whatever your drug is. Or those times you're like that first sip of wine, like that feeling you get. It's kind of like the first sip of coffee, you know?
I know that one.
Yeah. And your body connects it to that moment when you were rested or whatever. Now your body's going, all right, I want more of that. Go get more of that. Feeling.
Something in Karen's face lit up when you said cocaine.
I was so excited. I actually haven't thought about cocaine for a long time. What lit up was John talking about this, what essentially is known as the bliss point, right? It's there was, what is he? Like Howard, his name is Howard Markowitz. He termed the term bliss point. And that's when food is chemically engineered to make us want more. So it's chemically engineered to be addictive. And Oreos are the most addictive food. They have the perfect combination of salt, sugar, and fat, chemically engineered for exact quantities to leave your brain so excited. Like it releases dopamine. So you are so happy. You feel so good. But it doesn't allow you to feel satiated and it leaves you craving more and more and more. That's why you can eat so many more Oreos compared to roast chicken or broccoli, because those foods don't stimulate your brain in the same way. No natural food stimulates your brain in the same way as these highly processed, highly palatable foods. And this is what the big food manufacturers use to keep us wanting and buying more. Because this, I mean, Funyuns, like seriously, like if you look at it and you're just like, why would anybody want to eat it? Because it's chemically engineered.
It is. Yeah.
Hyper palatable.
Oh, yeah.
And you're craving it and wanting more and more and more and thinking about it as well.
And you know what really irks me as a mom is how many hyper palatable foods are designed for toddlers in a stage of life, depending on what you believe, but I do believe in a, like, how do I say this? Like in a genetic part of their lives where they may be predisposed to be picky anyway.
Yeah.
How many foods have been like developed by scientists to be highly palatable for them at an age where they're picky already?
It's criminal. And it is
criminal and it's fucked, because even as a parent today, if you're like a full-time working parent or if you just got a lot of shit going on, like it's hard to not reach for something that's been pre-made and pre-packaged to just stick in your diaper bag for when you need it, for when you're on the road. It's impossible.
It's like this alcohol thing I think we were talking about either off there or right at the beginning, where there's alcohol at like CrossFit events and people are encouraging you to go. It's the same way as a mom or a dad, you know, even a father of young kids. I have a peer that I work with who has a young son. He's 3. And this kid has never had processed food in his life. 3 years. And like his snacks and she's obsessed about it. She makes her own ketchup.
Love.
Like, yeah. Like she's
like that.
She's all kid. In, right?
I her want it to be like that. And here.
Well, but here's the thing. So it's no different though, because she'll be telling me these stories and other people will be looking at her like she has 3 heads.
Right.
Yeah.
Like how she's not the crazy like the one.
Kid, yeah. How can you not let your kid have Lunchables or Oreos how do you find the time? And for her, she's about the health of her kid, you know?
Yeah. I just remember being pregnant and being like, oh my God, my kid's never going to have puffs. Fucking puffs. Can you imagine? And I'm like,
right.
Oh my God, he loves puffs.
Shut up and eat the puffs.
But it's hard to keep, if you're not making your own stuff, do any sort of like shelf stable things that are even relatively made of real food for kids at a time where, and I read, I don't know how true this is, but I read this really cool thing that says that was like caveman era parents, let's just say, like, when your toddler started walking, right? So 18 months, two, whatever, they might have wandered away from the village. And if they wandered away from the village, they might have been drawn to bright colors, let's say like berries, mushrooms, yeah. things that were toxic. And so because of survival of the fittest, the kids who developed a palate that was more, less risky, less interested in colors and vegetables and fruits and things like that were the ones that survived. And so that is like this sort of like universal toddler experience where all of our kids just want tan foods and they don't want anything like green or bright. They just want like bread and potatoes and butter.
Yeah.
It could be part of evolution, kind of in a sense. And I'm like, of course, fucking puffs are tan. It makes sense. Okay, but that's what they want.
But you, I mean, I have to tell you, I didn't raise my kids here from until they were like 8 and 10, right? When we moved across. This country is impossible.
It's fun.
I never saw a drive-through until I moved to the United States. I've never had the convenience that you guys have here. It is really hard to be healthy in the United States of America. And I live in California. We have
America.
These hidden drives around me. I never have to get out of my car to do a single thing in life. Literally nothing. But anyway, it's very difficult. Everything is so packaged. All the bad foods are the ones that are subsidized by the government.
Yep.
It's incredibly hard to live a healthy lifestyle here. And even recently, the way that they're censoring any health information on YouTube and Instagram, the way that, you know what I mean? Like our freedom of speech is being taken away in such a big way right now.
I do feel the need to say right now that all opinions are Karin Thompson's. And if the IRS is looking to audit anyone, I will forward her address, not mine. That's all.
Yeah, bring it.
The odds are stacked against us. Oh. It's not impossible. And I do think there are plenty of arguments to be made for treats in moderation, right? I don't think it needs to be a full-on black and white situation, but certainly the odds are stacked against us as a populace when it comes to like... when it comes to figuring out, is that even fair? And we've got entire like science degrees dedicated to making us addicted to these different types of food, only to benefit the corporations that are selling.
And then the research is backed by these big food corporations who want to show that their food's good. And that's why on the food permit, those cereal things are right there because they're the ones funding the research.
Right.
But anyway, I was laughing because... have you ever seen that thing where the person wraps the Brussels sprout in the Ferrero Rocher?
Yes, I've seen it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
How would it be that for you?
That's me. That's what I need.
Nice.
I need some sort of like hypnotization where I can just unwrap and enjoy the Brussels sprout. Like, that's what I need.
They're so gross, but I love them so much. Oh, I love that as well. And I grew up on them as well. It's just, it's that comfort. It's the absolute comfort. I need comfort. I'm so stressed out. Like, where am I going to find it? I'm going to find it in this little bowl of chocolate that reminds me of my childhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that. I get every food, like Coca-Cola, when I'm feeling unsafe or unheard, I immediately still crave a Coca-Cola. There's this chocolate called a flake. When I meet my dad and he's not around and I really need that presence, like that's like just a big hug, I will immediately want to have a flake chocolate. And I know which each food means and what I need to get instead. But it's very interesting, these food memories and how they relate.
Wow. Yeah, that's very cool.
John, what does ice cream do for you?
Well, that one just gave me a crazy rush. It doesn't do a ton, honestly. It's not that much ice cream these days. It's like sweets, man. I was raised in the South. You got to understand, I grew up in that era when you'd go to McDonald's and you'd get your burger and then you chuck the styrofoam out the window because that's where it belonged. and it'd be there for about 10 years until it finally melted and dissolved. The Deep South is not known for its healthy eating, Karin. I don't know if you know this, but this is the truth, though. My grandfather and grandmother were farmers. They both lived into their late 90s.
You see?
And they had plenty of fat and plenty of butter, all raised on their farm or made on their farm. All their foods were organic because they were literally raised like right there. And they'd eat bacon, but they weren't worried about it because they cured the bacon. It came from their pigs. The flip side of that, though, is at some point, it went from being that kind of food in the South to being McDonald's.
Yeah.
The quick, convenient. You saw butters go away and turn to, I can't believe it's not butter, which is just oil.
Right.
And everything in the South started getting. Yeah, like fried chicken's a real thing, right? A real good thing, too. But you can start to live on it. It's cheap. It's easy to make. It tastes great. It does all these things you guys have been talking about here. It gives you that same feeling when you eat that first bite, you know, that dopamine rush.
Yeah.
So that's what I was raised in. Truthfully, CrossFit's probably got me. I don't want to be dramatic and say it saved my life, but it certainly got me off of that eating path. Yeah. Like of even like thinking that healthy diet culture was lean cuisine. And when I started CrossFit, those were in the paleo days. And so I'm like, oh, I'll do paleo. Nuts and seeds sounds great. And it was the first time I'd eaten whole foods. Like actual whole, like where I like literally just took my diet down to, all right, if it has more than one ingredient, I'm not going to eat it.
Right.
So I was eating steaks and potatoes and broccoli and like just simple foods, but nothing was processed. And all of a sudden I started putting two and two together as I was watching my body composition change and I was feeling better and I was getting faster. And I was also working out, so that helps too. But I certainly understood that. And my journey has always been big waves of like moments where I'm doing really well and I'm really lean and like strict on the diet, and other moments when the girls are like, hey, let's go get ice cream. And we're off to the races. And then you have a few weeks where things aren't going well.
Yeah.
So it's just, for me, it's always been like trying to find the consistency, but thankfully CrossFit kind of forces that to some degree.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're going to pay the workouts are really bad and they're going to be really bad. And you have to choose, am I going to make it worse by eating something terrible or drinking, or am I going to have my chicken and rice and water and I'll feel better tomorrow? It's still going to suck, but it won't suck as bad as it would. Like once I was able to connect that, like I kind of got it together.
Honestly, yeah. That's when I was drinking, that's when I started CrossFit 2 years before that. So I remember going in and trying the Saturday workout, hungover as fuck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was not okay. And I remember every single time, I'm not going to do this again next weekend. Right. I mean, it was awful. It's awful. Yeah. It really did help. Start at least the thought process, right? Like the contemplation process of, do I want to feel this way? Like just getting those kind of thoughts actually starting.
Around. Yeah. Cause even if you don't necessarily have the strength in the moment to be like, yeah, I don't want to do it again. So I don't want to feel this way again. So I'm not going to do it again. Having even the question in your mind must be the first step. Yeah.
I forget. There's the five stages of going through. I learned that a long time ago, but what it's like contemplation, then action and something else. But yeah.
Karin probably knows them.
Karin probably does know it. Karin, what are...
Karin was thinking about something wrong. She was...
Oh, there are many steps.
I was thinking about. I was thinking about this morning. I saw the documentary that Dale King's working on, or that he just made about addiction and CrossFit, and how fantastic that was. And they talk about addiction and how we don't have the ability as addicts to deal with feelings. Like that's where it just hits the fan for us. It's our inability to deal with our feelings that leads us to reach for a drink or a drug, right? And so. We're like these grown toddlers, these big people and like toddlers, and we don't know how to deal with our feelings and how CrossFit has helped these addicts because it's given them a way to process their feelings and to do really hard things and deal with really hard feelings in a way that's productive and proactive instead of destructive, right? And so I was just thinking about that and how excited I am to see the documentary that Tom's also involved in.
Oh, how cool.
What about it, Ben?
I can confirm toddlers don't know how to deal with feelings.
Okay.
Yeah, can want, confirm. Right?
Yes. How old is your little one now?
Two.
A boy or a girl?
A boy.
What's his name?
Hunter. And he's the best.
Oh my God, I want to see.
I know. Aww. We record this late at night because I have to do bedtime.
Oh. That's adorable. Oh, he's all squishy and fat and delicious.
No, he's like long and lean and a real little boy now. And I don't know where my little squishy baby went.
I love the squishy one.
I know.
And then suddenly they're teenagers and they smell awful.
I can't deal with that. My husband says that shit all the time. He's like, look how cute these little toes are. Someday they're going to be really stinky.
It goes so fast too. My son just got taller than me and I have to put my arm around him this way instead of under. It's awful. It's a weirdest feeling ever.
No, I lay awake at night like worried about the day he'll move out of this house already. I can't. And John reminds me every day what it's like to have kids who have moved out of your house already.
Yes, that just happened in a big way, John.
Well, yeah, she's on year two. She's in year two of Cincinnati. But before we wrap up, let's tell everyone where we can find your content. Revitafest.
Revitafest.
I keep saying it like that.
Revitafest.
Yes. So where they need to find everything? Where the best place for them to go?
Okay, go to revitafest.com and go there. And then you can enter the code John at checkout. And then you can get 50% off. Also, enter the code Nikki at checkout and also get 50% off. So there are two codes that you can choose from. And we can see who, if they should have the bachelor or not. But anyway.
Well, they're all going to put in Nikki's name.
Not what has like 500,000 followers and it's not me. So. I can tell you that right now. But that's the thing. I'll share the code. I will always share it with him. He will be very excited.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Okay, so revitafest.com. And then we're on Instagram at revitafest. And I'm on Instagram at sugarfree revolution, although my account is being shut down daily. What? So,
are people trying to be ill?
What'd you do?
No, I think it's because of the health information that I'm sharing, the interviews and stuff. They're not super keen.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I got a final warning and it said if you continue going against community guidelines, your account will be permanently disabled.
Oh, weird. So they think that you're violating.
Yeah, because I'm talking about nutrition and exercise as possible solutions to chronic disease. I mean, seriously.
That's so strange. There are so many accounts that do that.
Have you read the terms and conditions?
No one has.
Okay, I'm not being sarcastic. I'm asking because one of the easiest ones they have it, and I don't know it off the top of my head, but I can send it to you off the air, is that you have to be a certain type of account, either a creator or a business. You can't be a personal account. So if it's considered your personal account and you're sharing health information, they're not going to allow you to do that. And then when you're one of those other two accounts, because I too get this notification from time to time. Oh, look, you're suspended.
Oh, no.
No, I can still see you though.
But too late for you.
I got back. I came back. I made a comeback.
You come anyway, back.
Anyway, the point is there are some special things you have to go in and out. I do some ads for a nutrition company and I have to put an age limit on it. Or otherwise, I get that notification. Yeah, because you can't talk about losing weight to someone under the age of 18. It's just one of their rules.
Wow.
Yeah, they don't want you giving young girls bulimia. It's actually a pretty good rule when you think about it. Yeah.
We have to follow a lot of those in paid ads.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't necessarily be that way for organic content. So that's interesting. Okay. People must be reporting you. That is also part of it.
I think so. I think
you're a rebel, Karin. You're a rebel.
Who have you pissed off lately? Man.
Many, many people, John, you'd be surprised.
Many?
People of left, right, and center.
It's the food scientists who are out there making hyperpalatable foods. They're trying to shut her down.
Markowitz's colleagues. No, I'm just kidding. I think
I think Karin and I are equally hated, but by two different groups, so we like each other.
Yeah. Oh, I love John. I love him.
It's like the Venn diagram of hate, but you guys are in the middle.
Actually, our Venn diagram of hate would be me and Savan on either end, and she'd be in the middle. That's our connection.
Oh,
because he loves her. Nice. Yeah, because he loves her as much as I do. I also want record. For the record, for if there's anyone that follows him and listens, I said his name, so suck it. Anyway.
You reposted a voice of his the other day.
I know, I did. I'm a nice dude, Karin. I don't get a lot of credit for that.
You are the nicest.
Thank you. That's why you got flowers.
I love Sevan as well. So here's the thing. I love
There's no accounting for taste. I don't know what to say.
I don't know what to tell you.
Wow, John, you're going to have to keep me abreast of all the drama that comes out of this. Because I don't follow or pay attention to any of it. So John has to give me the details when shit is hitting the fan. So you got to keep me posted.
Oh, there's no dirt here. I'm just joking around. There's absolutely nothing bad here. No, Karin posted a clip from his show with her in it, and I shared it. And yes. I made the caption, "One of the people in this video loves me." That's all I said. That was it. And that was fair. It was true and fair. True and fair. So
men stating facts.
Just stating facts.
How many people forwarded me that clip, John?
What? From
Instagram. They were like, "Oh my God, did you see what John just did? Did you see what he just did?" I was like, "Oh, isn't he just the best?
He's the best. He's like, he sends flowers."
Exactly. This was like a flower moment to me.
Oh.
There you go.
Thank you.
I know. Now you've broken it to the whole world that I actually have a heart, and I'm not sure I like that. So I'm going to be editing the hell out of this podcast.
There you go.
All right. Well, ladies, thank you for joining.
Yeah.
Super fun to hear your stories.
Yeah. And thank you both. I was just going to say thank you both for being so incredibly vulnerable. Like, I really appreciate you sharing both your personal stories of sobriety and even Karin, you sharing your story of being let go from CrossFit, because that's a definitely like a story that we can all relate to in changing of careers and workplace environments. And I really appreciate both of your honesty and transparency and vulnerability. It means the world to me to hear it. And I think to a lot of people who will be listening to this episode who may be going through some shit, because we all going through some shit. It's really nice to feel like you're not alone when you're in those really emotionally charged moments, you know?
Absolutely. No, thank you. And you're not alone.
All right. Well, on that, we'll say thank you to everyone joining us this evening, and we will chat with you guys soon.